Bitch and moan, cry and complain. Oh, how sweet it is to see Chiefs fans in pain. Oh, did you all see what Taylor Swift's boyfriend did on Sunday afternoon and why it didn't count? That was, oh my, Sam, I'm going to go off on the Chiefs today. And believe me, I'm not going to let it distract me from the fact that the Raiders played the most boring game in NFL history.
But at least, I thought they played a baseball game.
But at least we could celebrate, or I could celebrate. The Chiefs just, oh, I don't even know. I'm going to save everything, all my thoughts on that, for when we actually get to that game. But we got a lot to talk about. This weekend was really fascinating for a lot of different reasons. We never also got a chance to talk about our final thoughts about the in-season tournament, and we have to talk about the Shohei Ohtani contract at least a little bit, because that was, I mean, the numbers for that contract were some of the more like fascinating contractual things I've ever seen in my entire life, between the total and the deferred money. We got a lot to get to. But before we get to that, Sam, you finally moved into your new place. How was night one?
Yeah, so this is coming from the new place on the new Wi-Fi. We won't bore you guys with things that don't have to do with sports, because we know that gets a little annoying. But for some reason, the TVs aren't communicating with the Wi-Fi.
Ah.
And it's driving me crazy, because my computer can connect, my phone can connect, but for some reason, the TVs just have a hard time.
Well, maybe Ethernet cable that thing. That's the only way. That's the only thing that I can.
Well, give you know, on that. You know, the missus, my roommate here, isn't gonna really allow me to have a big long blue Ethernet cord run from the downstairs to the upstairs where the modem is. But
well, then maybe a gray one instead of a blue one. That might
well,
help.
I already have the blue one.
Oh well, okay.
You want me to paint it gray?
Maybe.
our walls are like a tannish. Like a beige, so maybe I should go like beige color, so they blend in.
Blend it in. Well, I'll tell you what, I think Kadarius Toney was trying to blend in with the
the Broncos the best team in the AFC West?
I don't know. Let's just hop right into this game, because it's what everybody's been talking about recently. With everything coming out of that this weekend, whether or not it was the most boring game in NFL history, or maybe one of the greatest plays we've seen in NFL history that didn't count. The Cowboys just shellacking the Eagles. Justin Herbert is now out for the season.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Zach Wilson played the game of his life this weekend. The 49ers are still insanely good. There were so many things that happened this weekend. But obviously, the Bills-Chiefs game, and not even necessarily the game, the ending to the game, the final 2 minutes is really what we need to talk about. I'm not going to necessarily preface this with anything. I just want to get your thoughts on that game. And because mainly the only discussion about this that I've heard is the controversy over the call. And it has been the only thing that I've heard basically on every single sports show, the entire day, and including today on Tuesday. Like, it's just everybody seems to have an opinion. Obviously, we have one too. What is yours?
Well, we can jump back a little bit on this. I think, as looking at the Chiefs as a whole during this second half of the season, they just have not looked very good, particularly on offense. If you take away that game that they had against the Raiders, where they were actually down 14-0,
they were
during a large portion of that game. The last 6-7 weeks, this offense just has not looked the same as it has in the Patrick Mahomes, Andy Reid era. And that's, I think, the biggest thing that jumps out. I mean, they're failing to now score 20 points in back-to-back games. This is the Chiefs we're talking about, the team that people assumed would have the best offense in the league. We put them in that upper tier, and they just aren't getting it done. So that, to me, as a whole, they're playing just really poorly. Mm-hmm. And these last couple of games have been against the Packers and Bills. I mean, we saw what the Packers looked like against the Giants. The Bills have been throwing away games. I mean, those are opportunities for the Chiefs to get a stranglehold on that number one seed in the AFC that's just hanging there because no one wants to take it. and they've just failed in back-to-back weeks. So that's a little bit demoralizing for the Chiefs. That call, I mean, it was a pretty straightforward call, right? Just looking at that still, I think even when you're watching that play live, it's like, okay, when is Tony going to take that little half step back that we normally see? Because he's lined up, well, past the ball almost.
It's blatant.
Like when is – and that's got to be so foreign for a football player who's played their entire life, and especially a wide receiver who's lined up every single play they've played. And it's like, this is the one time that he's not going to do all the things that are like almost inherent at that point. That was just bizarre. But I guess I think our friend sent us clips. There was like, he did that 5 times in that game where he could have been called, and he got called. Was it last week or the week before that he got called on one as well, lining up offside as a wide receiver? I mean, there's just no excuse, really. There's no excuse for that. But my biggest thing is the reaction from Mahomes and Reed was, I mean, it was embarrassing.
Oh yes. I'm going to get to that. Cause
what an awful look. I mean, this is like almost a villain arc for Mahomes.
Mm-hmm.
In a way, one of the most lovable. I heard a lot of. I'll give this credit to Colin Cowherd. He compares the Mahomes Andy Reid Chiefs to the Steph Curry Warriors.
Yeah,
the nation as a whole loves Curry and all the theatrics that he does, and he's, I mean, widely considered a hero. But now we're kind of getting to sort of a villain arc with him, where everyone is sort of turning on Curry, not really as much, I think, as Mahomes, but Mahomes is really entering that villain arc of more so people are tired of seeing him win. And now that he's complaining about a call, even though the Chiefs probably get the most calls in their favor, which, hey, you got to be lucky to win. And they're a team that wins a lot, so they get lucky a lot inherently. But to see him have that dramatic of an outburst to it was just, I mean, it was baffling for a guy. It seemed completely out of character.
Yeah. Okay. So I've been thinking about this a lot today because there are so many different things that I want to say about this. So I'm going to try to be as concise as I possibly can. As far as referees giving players a warning, most of my time playing football was either played at quarterback or cornerback. I didn't play a ton of wide receiver, but I was very intimately familiar with wide receivers because I was either covering them or throwing to them. And it from the moment that I started playing football, it always seemed, and it was always taught, that as a wide receiver, you walk up to the line of scrimmage, you get set, and you peek over at the ref. You just look at him and you go, hey, am I good? And they'll give you a thumbs up or not. I don't know the intimate details of whether or not referees are supposed to warn you without asking. Even so, as I don't think referees are entitled to do that. I'm not entirely sure if they are or they aren't, but there's a difference between asking for help and expecting help. And I think as a wide receiver, you're definitely allowed to ask for help, but I don't think it's fair to expect help from the referee in that situation. Now, I heard a couple coaches say that generally referees will come and they'll give a warning to either the coaches or the players, say, hey, you can't keep doing that. But again, I don't know. Again, the difference is between asking for help and expecting help. And I don't think as a player, you should be expecting help in that situation. You can ask for it, but not expect it. So that's one thing. Two, as a referee, first of all, you have to make that call. And I don't want to hear anybody talk about, you know, the referee screwed the Chiefs in that situation and it kind of robbed one of the best plays of the century. As he's throwing that flag, it's not like he's throwing that flag going, you know what? I bet you the greatest play of the 21st century is about to happen. Flag. Like, that it's not the referee's fault. He's doing his job, and he did it correctly. So I know that there were people who were saying, you know, that him lining up offsides, whether he was 2 inches back or 2 inches forward, didn't have an effect on the play. Well, it did, because it's illegal. It was illegal yesterday. It was illegal a week ago. It was illegal a month ago. It was illegal a year ago. And it will always be illegal. That's always been the rule. You can't pick and choose whether or not you want to enforce the penalty because it does or doesn't have an effect on the play. It's either in the rule book or it's not. Now, as far as Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes go, I wrote down the quote from Mahomes that he had said after the game. He said, "I know as fans you want to see the guys on the field decide the game." And my only response to that is they did. Kadarius Toney lined up offsides. He did decide how that game was. That wasn't the referee deciding that the game was going to be affected by penalties. You can't. I don't think he's saying what he thinks he's saying. Because saying, "I know as fans you guys want to see the guys on the field decide the game." Well, he lined up offsides. So they did decide the game. And for Andy Reid to say that it was an embarrassment, like an embarrassment for the NFL to have that called, why? Because they were doing their job correctly? I mean, we ridicule referees weekly about missed calls, this, that, or the other. This is a point in time where a referee made the absolutely correct call, and people are still up in arms about it. Like, you can't have it both ways. You can't complain about the officials missing a call 1 week and then bitch and moan about them actually making the correct call. Like, everything about this after the play, the reaction and all of this stuff, just completely baffles me. Like, it's an illegal play. It always has been and always will be. I don't know what else there is to say.
I know. It's just, it's wild. And I think saw Mahomes said he regrets the outburst. Reed kind of doubled down on it at the end of the game. I'm just looking at some of the reaction. It's interesting to see Greg Jennings, Keyshawn Johnson, two guys that were big time wide receivers, just going to the bats of the refs and saying, "Well, the onus is on the player to check. If you're on the ball, you have to look at the ref." I mean, it's wild. I looked at Andy Reid's comments, and they're saying that he should have been warned, which I guess is, from what I'm gathering, is sort of a normal occurrence, but it isn't mandatory, is the thing that I gathered. But it is a thing that I guess Andy Reid is used to. So I can see his gripe in the fact that he wasn't warned, and then that just all of a sudden happened. It definitely could catch him off guard. But this whole notion that this ref should be yelling in a stadium that is packed, "Hey, 19, you need to back up." First off, there's no way that Kadarius Toney could hear him in that.
Well, yeah, because he's in the slot. It's not like he's near.
Right. Like, he's, I don't know, 30 yards away, 40 yards away.
Right. And that's what I was saying. Like, you can peek down the line and look at the referee, but don't expect him to help you.
Well, but it's not like if I'm a side ref and I'm sitting there like, "Oh my gosh, he's lining up on offsides." It's not like I'm supposed to then run in and tell him, "Hey, you got to move back." It's like, you got to just let the play. If he's not going to look over, then I can't possibly get his attention being in a legal position type of thing. And it's just, I think a lot of other fan bases are eating it up because the Chiefs have been so dominant for so long. And now it's like that, the Yankees and the Patriots, everyone else sort of gangs up against those fan bases that had success.
Yeah. The absolute outburst that we've seen from Andy Reid and especially Patrick Mahomes, like, I like both of them. I'm not going to hold this against them for the rest of their lives or anything. And I can even understand, as a player, being upset that there wasn't a warning. But again, at the end of the day, it's that expectation that you're going to be helped versus asking for help. Like, you've always been able to look at a referee and go, "Hey, am I good?" Like, that's, and I've never seen a referee just not tell you. and then throw a flag. You know, like in all of my experience, either covering wide receivers or watching my receivers go set up, there's always that quick point to the wide receiver. I mean, to the referee, and the thumbs up from the ref, or tell him to back up. Like that's a part of the game. But the entitlement to think that they're gonna help you in that situation, I think that's what is really rubbing people the wrong way, especially because it was the correct call.
I think this is more a front externally by an organization with the head of the face of the organization, and then the head, the decision maker in Reed and Mahomes, that are protecting their guy, right? The blame should be completely put on Kadarius Toney and to some extent Mahomes, because as a QB, you should, I guess, be there to not snap the ball until everyone's set. And it's like, hey, he could have told Toney to back up. But I think this putting the blame on the refs absolves a little bit of the blame for Kadarius Toney. And I think that's publicly they're going to bat for him, but privately there should be conversations that is like, okay, we are the Kansas City Chiefs. We've won 2 Super Bowls in the past 4 seasons. We don't make mistakes like this. This is game wrecking mistakes. And this guy's been doing it. I mean, he hasn't been doing it all year, but his reputation now is that he's going to find a way to mess it up. And it's like, yeah, they need to have that conversation with him, or maybe it's too late.
I mean, between this and all of the drops that he's had, it's going to be really interesting to see if he's with the Chiefs next year or he's got a job with any team and next year. I mean, he's had such a bad year.
I mean, he's a former first-round pick. This team is just starving for wide receiver talent and someone to step up for this team. We thought it was going to be Rashee Rice. He hasn't really filled in that primary.
He's gotten better though. Like, to his credit, he
had one good game. Really well. Had one really good game against the Raiders. But outside of that, I mean, he's had kind of disappointing games. They've had Justin Watson has had a big role, but they need someone to really step in. They thought it was going to be Mecole Hardman when they got him. He's barely touched the field. He's muffed more punts than I think he has catches this year for the Chiefs. And Toney should be that guy. They were kind of banking on him to be that guy last year, and he stepped up.
Right.
And now it's just like, what is going on? Where is the disconnect here? Why are the Kansas City Chiefs now having these operational errors?
I don't know. I mean, as a Raider fan, it's nice. It distracts from the fact that my team sucks. So I'm in complete joy over the whole situation.
I mean, the fact that they are one game up on the Broncos.
On the Broncos, yeah. You asked if they were the best team in that division. They might be.
They're playing right like it.
They might be, which I wouldn't have said 5 weeks ago, but my goodness, that the Broncos are really starting to make a case. I don't think it's in doubt anymore that they're going to make the playoffs. I don't know what their remaining schedule is. I'll peek at it real quick. They have okay, so they have the Lions, which, I mean, all of a sudden doesn't feel like an unwinnable game for them.
Nope.
But they have the Patriots, which they should destroy. They have the Justin Herbertless Chargers, and then they play the Raiders. Like, they should
easy dubs.
Yeah, like they should be 10-7. I mean, they could easily win out, and that which would put them at 11. Are they 7-6 right now?
Yeah, they're 7-6.
Okay, so yeah, so they'd be 11-6. So they could easily finish 11-6. And let me peek at the Chiefs schedule.
Just as easy.
Yeah. Okay. So they have the Patriots, the Raiders, the Bengals, and the
Chargers.
Yeah. So
could they go and lose to the Patriots this weekend?
I could see, if they were going to lose one, I could see them losing to the Bengals. I mean, the Bengals.
With how well Jake Browning's playing?
Jake Browning, local guy. We got to give him a shout out. So awesome seeing him play really well. I mean, they're putting up points.
Yeah. Big
like,
time.
Big
I mean,
time.
They have weapons over in.
Yeah. I mean, that's 34 points in back-to-back games with Jake Browning.
Oh, you know the NFL, when they made that week 17 game, Cincinnati in Arrowhead, mm-hmm. they were like, oh, yeah, this game is going to break. That's on CBS. You're going to have Romo and Nance on that call. Oh, this game's going to break all the records. And now it's looking awful.
I know. The Chiefs are in shambles. The Bengals are, I don't know. They may not be in shambles, but they're not what you expected them to be.
There's definitely some allure missing with that matchup, with no Joey B.
Absolutely. But also, every team in the AFC North right now, since we're talking about the Bengals, above 500.
Yeah.
Bengals and Steelers are 7-6. The Browns are 8-5, and the Ravens are 10-3.
So who do you have more confidence in within the AFC North, besides, obviously, the Ravens? Because I think they're running away with that division.
As they should. I don't – you know, as funny as it sounds to say, I mean, Joe Flacco has been the best quarterback for the Browns this whole year.
So as of tonight, which we're recording on Tuesday the 12th, Joe Flacco was put back on the practice squad for the Cleveland Browns.
Why?
Well, so I listened to an Adam Schefter
that's so weird
that they put on, and I guess it as long as they don't like sign him to an actual like contract, like he was signed to the practice squad and then they elevated him to the main roster. So after a certain amount of weeks, you automatically get put back on the practice squad. Or the team can sign him to a longer term deal, and they just haven't done that yet. So theoretically, any team could go in and make an offer to Joe Flacco, and his, because he's technically a free agent while he's under the practice squad tag. So a team like, I don't know, Houston, maybe, if CJ Stroud is going to have long term effects with the concussion. Heck, the Jets should have. He should already be on the Jets roster. It's probably a little too late now. I don't know. Chargers, if you're super desperate.
Chargers are going to make the playoffs. They're not going to be able to crawl their way back in. I mean, with the teams that are 7-6, with the entire AFC being 7-6 right now.
They're just delusional. I don't know what to say. The fact that Brandon Staley is still around is absolutely crazy. But I don't know. Pittsburgh should absolutely go out right now and sign Joe Flacco.
Well, it's not crazy to say right now that the second best quarterback in that division is Jake Browning.
Well, the way Joe Flacco is playing, he might be the second best.
It's more giving credence to the fact that Jake Browning's been playing outstanding for the Bengals. I mean, you have a guy who's been there for a couple of years. He knows the system. It's not entirely shocking that he is playing really well. That's, I guess, one of the benefits that you have to having a backup quarterback who's been with the team for a very long time.
And a guy with a lot of big game experience. I mean, he played all 4 years at Washington, put up great numbers.
Beat the crap out of your college team.
Well,
I'm kidding.
Intermittently, I guess. They beat Indy. They destroyed Indy. Yeah. Two good wins against AFC South opponents.
Yeah.
So let's see. Let's see what he does against someone outside the AFC South.
Who we got? So they've got the Vikings and then the Steelers.
Oh, easy dub.
Yeah, they're gonna destroy the Vikings, and then the one against. I mean, they don't have a super easy schedule. They finish with the Chiefs and the Browns. And the Steelers are obviously that's a divisional game. So they don't have an easy way to get into the finals, into the playoffs. But there's certainly a path for them.
Yeah, you could say there's a path for every AFC North team. But again, they all have to play each other.
Right.
Still, you got Jacksonville, every single team pretty much that was leading their division lost, except for San Francisco and Jackson and except for San Francisco and Baltimore, every single team. So the NFL just got a little bit closer. Everyone got a little bit closer, little finer margins. Like now we can sit here and say Buffalo might win their division. And they were down and out a couple weeks ago.
Is it safe to say right now that the three best teams in the NFL are all in the NFC? Do you think?
You got to give respect to Baltimore.
So if Baltimore and Philly were
Baltimore's playing better than Philly.
Okay. I asked because the difference between the two conferences are hilarious. Like the NFC is so top heavy. And then the AFC is just absolutely muddled with 7-6, 7-6, 7-6, 7-6, 8-5, like all over the place.
Yeah.
And yet you have the Cowboys and the 49ers who feel definitively like the two best teams in the NFL right now.
So do you want to talk about that now? Because I think that's the big question, right? Like how good is this a different Dallas team than the ones that we've had in the past?
Certainly playing like it.
You think?
Yeah, I mean,
there was a couple of years ago, Dak Prescott's first season with Zeke, they went like 13-3, and ended up losing them in that first game of the playoffs. I mean, there's been good Tony Romo teams. There's plenty of good Dallas regular season teams.
They have to avoid the 49ers in the playoffs, though.
Well, like they know who their daddy is.
Like if they end up playing Philly. See, here's the thing. If the Cowboys get the one seed, then they're definitely going to end up in the NFC Championship game, I think, which is a place that they haven't been in a very long time. I think if they got a tough game.
They got at Bills, at Miami versus Detroit. That's a tough three-game stretch. If Detroit finds a way to come back to where they were before, Miami figures it out. At least it's in Miami. And you got Buffalo, who's playing better than – or feeling better than anyone else in the league. That's a tough three-game stretch.
And then they got the Commanders. And that's the thing. Philly's coming out of that. Philly, I mean, we highlighted Philly's ridiculous gauntlet of a schedule that they actually fared pretty decently in. But they're coming out of that, and they get the Seahawks, Giants, Cardinals, and Giants.
Cakes.
Like,
cakewalk.
Like, they should easily win all four of those games.
Yeah, the only tricky one is at Seattle.
Right. So that's the only thing. I don't know. And then what's San Francisco's schedule? Because isn't Dallas 2 right now?
Yes, because San Francisco has the head-to-head.
Right. I don't know. You can tell me how confident you feel with that home game against the Rams at the end. But the only sketchy one on your schedule is that Monday night Christmas game against the Ravens. But at least that's in San Francisco.
Hey, that is sketchy. We got to give respect. I mean, Lamar's a tough guy to – defend against. I think I'm not worried about that San Francisco offense. Gosh, I just sound so confident.
You right really now, do.
I know. It's just setting me up. I'm just so encouraged by how San Francisco has played. Firstly, against Philly, Dallas, they destroyed Jacksonville. They beat Tampa, who's right now a division leader. Like, they've played well against all some of the best teams that they've played. I guess they didn't play well against Cincinnati when they had Burrow, but they've kind of beaten every good team that they've faced on their schedule so far and looked, I mean, it hasn't even been close in some of those games. Like, they haven't really been too worried in some of those games. So against a team like Baltimore, it should be business as usual, but you never know. These talks keep coming up of Brock Purdy MVP. Scary, man.
I don't think he's going to win MVP. I think Dak probably right now, unless he falls off a cliff.
If both teams win out, you'd see Dak would win it over Purdy?
Probably.
Because they're both 10-3.
I think he's the betting favorite right now.
I think he is as well.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure Purdy's numbers are actually better.
Yeah, Dak. Yeah, Dak is the betting favorite right now. Purdy's second.
Right. Right. I mean, Purdy is third.
He's pretty good.
Passing yards. Yeah. That is absolutely – and, of course, Dak is fourth. But that's just, like, actually bizarre to me because there's no way Purdy is anywhere near – these guys that are towards the top in attempts, the guy averages like around 25 attempts a game.
Well, and you know what the funny thing is there was – I seem to remember you talking about how Purdy and Debo just were for a while were not on the same page. And that seems to have just been.
Oh yeah, that's gone.
That's out the window now.
Well, you know what it is.
Debo and him are crazy.
I think last year Debo coming off of he held out for a new contract, and I think he got injured. Like, he missed time during that season, so he really wasn't the same. I think this guy that's now getting, he's the yak king again, where he's just taking screen passes that are behind the line of scrimmage for 50 yards. He's doing that the last few games. I mean, you know, you have him on your fantasy team. He wasn't able to drag you to the playoffs, but.
Oh, I missed it by like 14 points, I think.
I know, man. I'm sorry.
I know, it's close.
But that sort of thing really helps really boost those stats. But yeah, I mean, he's hitting him over the middle. That deep ball against Seattle, that 54-yard touchdown pass, first off, was perfect. Is Brock Purdy might be touch wise the best deep ball thrower. He can't throw it the farthest.
Yeah, he's a stud.
But placement, he's showing something.
So, can I give you a stat right now that might not make you feel good?
Uh-oh.
Okay, so I'm on ESPN right now, and I'm looking at their power rankings. However, if you scroll down a little bit more.
Wait, you just gotta scroll to the top, and you see the Niners.
Well, the Niners are one. But if you scroll down lower past all the rankings, they have projections, like, percentage-wise for the AFC and the NFC. Like, what the percentage is for each team to, or each team, I guess, in contention, to make the playoffs, clinch a division, clinch a bye, or make the Super Bowl.
Okay.
What do you want to guess right now that they have the 49ers percent chance as to make the Super Bowl?
Well, it's going to be way – it's going to be, like, astronomically high, like, kind of disrespectful. I'm going to say 93%.
It is a 51% chance, a little bit. But it is a 51%
chance.
Who's
second?
Take a guess.
Dallas?
I mean, it's either going to be between Philly and Dallas.
So Dallas?
It is Dallas, yeah. They have Dallas with a 23% chance to make the Super Bowl. And in the AFC, I'll just round it out, they have the Ravens with the best chance at 35, the Chiefs with a 25% chance, and then the Dolphins with a 22% chance.
But the AFC chance, like, I bet last week we would have been sitting there probably still saying the Chiefs would have made it out, like, confidence meter-wise. Maybe a couple days last week could have talked me into the Dolphins, but nowhere did I kind of think Baltimore, because they have their own playoff demons, and I think people kind of forget that. If we're saying that they're going to be the favorites to make the Super Bowl, they have to win two playoff games, which I haven't seen them ever do. But it's just like in the AFC, it's changed, and it might be Buffalo after this week, dude. I'm telling you.
Yeah.
If Buffalo goes out and beats Dallas.
Yeah. They have Buffalo with a 7% chance to make the Super Bowl at the moment. But yeah, if they beat Dallas, that's really going to put a lot of teams on notice. That's going to be like, maybe we should not get the one seed.
You know,
and avoid Buffalo.
I'm looking at Dak's stats compared to Purdy. They're close. Dak has less interceptions, which is, I mean, isn't that crazy that a guy that was getting just destroyed this offseason for leading the league in interceptions and, like, turnovers, period, is now back to taking care of the ball and being extremely accurate?
Yeah.
I mean, that is completely
really
wild.
Well.
But he's leading the league in touchdowns, has less interceptions than Purdy, just a little 50 less yards, pretty comparable in yards per game, has a pretty I think he has a better QB. No, he has 0.1 less QBR, has a little worse rating. But I think he's kind of got that cachet, almost name factor, where he's been here, he's been around the block a little bit longer than Purdy. He does have 100 more attempts than Purdy does this season, but I could see him being the front runner for MVP.
Yeah, so right now, so I'll give you guys the head-to-head comparison. They're actually They're very, very close. So Purdy's right now sitting at a 70% completion percentage. Dak is sitting at a 69. So that's basically a wash. Dak has 3,505 yards. Purdy has 3,553 yards. That's pretty much a wash. Dak has 28 touchdowns. Purdy has 25. And then Purdy has 7 interceptions, and Dak has 6. I mean, they're about as close as you can get right now. But yeah. I think it's going to be because the quality of these Dallas wins, and just by how much they're blowing people out. Like, their point differential right now, it's 421 to 233. Like, that point differential is... Well, dude,
they got to play the Giants twice.
I understand that, but you got to play the Cardinals twice, or you get to play the Cardinals twice.
Hey, the
like, let's not act like the Seahawks Cardinals and beat, Cardinals and the Rams. Cardinals
beat Dallas. Let's not go there.
Hang on. The Cowboys have a tougher division than the 49ers.
Oh, okay. Maybe.
It's what do you mean, pretty maybe? Top-heavy. They have by default of the Eagles being in there. The Eagles are better than the Rams, Seahawks, and the Cardinals.
Dude, the Seahawks almost beat the Cowboys on Thursday.
And the Commanders and Giants have more wins than the Cardinals.
You know the Cardinals are a plucky team. The Cardinals beat Dallas. Okay, you keep throwing out the Cardinals as this awful team, but Dallas lost to them.
They are awful.
But Dallas lost to them.
Well, you guys lost games you shouldn't have lost.
Oh, three of them for sure.
Right,
three of them.
So it happens.
But then you also like we can't. This is where if we go head to head,
you lost to the Vikings.
Individually, Dak Prescott, I think, is going to get it. And maybe that there's also if you were to go down the route of Brock Purdy's supporting cast is better. I completely get that. Even though Dak Prescott probably has the best wide receiver, one of the best wide receivers in the NFL, doesn't have Tyreek Hill, he has CeeDee Lamb. But Brock Purdy's supporting cast as a whole is better than Dak's. Completely get that. That is what Dak is doing is absolutely phenomenal. It looks like Dallas might get over the hump this year. But if we go to team success, it's not comparable. First off, the Niners absolutely destroyed Dallas. Pretty much put a leash on them and walked them around the park. And that leash said, who's your daddy? It's the Niners. Give me a call when this dog is lost.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Like, for Dallas, I think for Dallas to get to the Super Bowl, it's imperative that they have that home field advantage. Because
started this conversation? Is that how it got here?
Yes. Because if they end up facing the 49ers, they're gonna need their crowd with them. I don't see Dallas going to San Francisco and beating them in San Francisco. I think Dallas absolutely has to have that home field advantage for this to go in their favor. We talked a ton about NFL Week 14. We have so much more stuff we have to get to. So let's pivot off of this, and then we'll end up circling our way back because I have an idea maybe for how we could do picks the remainder of the season.
Is it true that I clinched it? Did you go back to see how many weeks each of us have won?
So there are 18 weeks, and I believe you're at 9 wins. So I couldn't do anything to – I mean, theoretically, I could win out to tie you, but I couldn't beat you.
Well, we tied the first week and we missed this last week. So that puts it down to 16 weeks. And you're saying I won 9 of them?
Well, so the last one that we had, let me just go back. Let me go back because I have the sheet real quick. Let me back this up for a second. So I have the week 13 sheet, which you had the Texans beating the Broncos, so that was in your favor, and you had the 49ers over the Eagles. So yeah, you're at 8 right now. So I couldn't beat you, but I could tie you. However, I have an idea for maybe how we could try something a little bit different, but we'll get to that. Okay. So, do you want to do an in-season tournament thing or talk about the Ohtani contract?
Let's do the in-season.
Okay. So the only thing that I really want to talk about with this is, and I wasn't even going to bring this up during the show.
Okay.
But I saw something.
Good start.
On I saw something on SportsCenter that I just didn't. I hated the question. I thought it was the stupidest question I've seen about the in-season tournament. I get why they're asking it because you have to. But SportsCenter posted, should the in-season tournament winner be guaranteed a playoff spot?
I thought we talked about this a couple weeks ago.
I think we did. But now that the in-season tournament's over and we've kind of seen it and have a feel for it, like let's rehash this a little bit because obviously this is a topic of conversation in and around the world of sports. But to me, I don't get it. But I'll let you start.
Oh, so you're saying no?
I'm saying definitively no.
Okay, well this will be a pretty quick conversation because I think that's a no. I think in its current form, it should be a no. There's just not enough games. What is it? A total of how many of the Lakers win? Eight?
Seven.
Seven?
I believe.
So you're saying seven wins. It's going 7-0. Winning seven straight should then guarantee you a spot in April?
Mm-hmm.
Is that when the playoffs start? I think that's laughable to think
that.
But if we were to say, if you got to win 25 games, which I think that would be too long for the in-season tournament, I think people would get annoyed with it and sick of it. But it's got to be a substantial amount of the season for it to then be a guaranteed playoff spot.
So we're both on the idea of no for this, and especially because I think you could theoretically win the in-season tournament. And then if you could win the in-season tournament and then guarantee yourself a playoff spot, you could technically just not play the rest of the year. And that would be stupid. However, like, what if you were guaranteed?
If we go to this current team, the Lakers win seven games in a row. They're the in-season tournament champs. LeBron is not playing the rest of this regular season. He's age 39,
right?
As of this month, like he is resting his body. Anthony Davis is resting his body. They're doing the bubble part two, where they're taking months off to be ready for the playoffs. Like that is what's going to happen with that team.
Right. So what if you were guaranteed a play-in spot?
Okay. I think that's a start.
Okay. See, I still think I'm against that, too.
No, because, I don't think that's big of a deal.
No, because, again, you can still do the same thing, though.
Yeah, but being in the play-in doesn't guarantee you make the playoffs. You then still have to bring it in two games. And anything can happen in two games.
I understand. You'd end up having a ridiculously hard path to get to the finals because you'd have to, one, win your game – your games to even get into the playoffs, and then you're going to be either the seventh or the eighth seed, which means you're going to be playing teams who are, you know, you're going to be playing against right now if the season ended. You'd be playing against the Thunder, the Timberwolves, the Mavericks, like the top teams. That's so weird that I just listed those teams
as the top teams.
Right. But I mean, at the standings right now, that's who we got.
It actually, when you say it like that, it doesn't sound that bad.
Right.
Lakers.
It may not be that bad. Because, I mean, who'd you rather see right now? Would you rather see, you know?
You want to see the Thunder if you're the Lakers.
Yes.
Anthony Davis versus Chet Holmgren. Give me that all day.
Right. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Or Dallas, because Dallas can't defend. Well, they did beat the Lakers, actually, today.
Well, either way, the other proposal is just having it be a play-in spot, and I'm still not 100% sure I'm okay with that either.
So I heard, I can't remember, and I probably mentioned this a couple weeks ago again when we talked about this, but it's like it's almost like a guaranteed, almost like a ticket to be in the next stage of the playoffs. So if you play out the year, you finish as the eighth seed, you're in the play-in tournament, but since, I mean, you're in the play-in tournament, but because you're the in-season tournament winner, you automatically become the sixth seed, right? No, the sixth seed, right? So you don't get home court, but but you don't have to worry about the play-in tournament. So there's that added boost because of the in-season tournament win. Or if you finish as the sixth seed, you automatically get home court in the first round. So you become the fourth seed type of thing. So you still have to play out the entire season and earn that spot. You just get a little boost because, I mean, you won a tournament that teams are playing hard to win.
Right. I don't know. Again, I don't.
It's not enough games really to justify having ramifications for the playoffs.
That's what I'm saying. I think that's the biggest holdup for me, is it's seven games.
Especially when you consider, like, the Lakers ended up beating the Pacers in the finals. They beat New Orleans in the semifinals. Mm-hmm. There are, right now, there's no guarantee that the Pacers and New Orleans are going to be, like, there's no guarantee that the Pacers are going to be a top four seed in the East at the end of the year. There's no guarantee that New Orleans, which is right now, I think, a play-in team, is going to be one of those top teams in the NBA towards the end of the year. So then it's like, well, who did the Lakers beat to win this thing? Right. And I'm not, that's not me. I mean, the Pacers were playing absolutely phenomenal. They beat the Bucks. They beat Boston. Like, they did all that stuff. It's just like, when you look back on it at the end of the year, which we're talking about, this would have ramifications for the end of the year. Those teams might not be in that same spot.
Right. Yeah. The seven game thing for me is really, really what's holding me up here. I don't like the idea of you only playing seven games and that automatically gives you a chance, if you win, to have a spot in the playoffs. That just doesn't feel that's not a large enough percentage to justify that move.
What if it gave you the number one pick?
No, that's too much too.
What if it gave you a top five pick? I mean, that has, like, we're not even talking about just the next season ramifications. We're talking about, like, 10 years from now. That could be huge. Well, but wouldn't teams be playing so hard?
They already were playing pretty hard. Like, this ended up being a really big success.
I mean, if you're – especially if a team like the Lakers, who don't have their draft picks. I feel like they don't – I feel like New Orleans has all their draft picks from the Anthony Davis trade. Still, I don't know that for sure, but a team like the Clippers, who don't have a first round draft pick for the next 10 years, they would be playing so phenomenally hard. Like, you wouldn't see lineups with James Harden, Westbrook, Kawhi, and Paul George all on the court at the same time. Mm-hmm. You'd be like, no, we can't mess around with this BS.
Dude, the Pistons are 2-21.
See, that's the thing. That's the big, big thing when you talk about, if someone were to go up to you and be like, oh, yeah, I think, like, the Lakers should automatically have a playoff spot. If the Pistons would have went on a run and somehow won seven straight, there's no way they would have 14 wins on the season.
Right.
And seven of those would have been in the play-in tournament. I mean, the in-season tournament, I keep mixing those up in my head. The in-season tournament, and that would justify them making the playoffs? That's absolutely crazy.
Right.
That team is dog water. The Spurs. Right. The Spurs could have. And they've been awful.
Yeah, it wouldn't work. I don't know what the reward should be. I doubt it's going to permanently stay at $500,000. I mean, it seemed to be enough to incentivize everybody to play hard. It certainly seemed like teams were playing hard. Mm. But I do think their reward is going to get adjusted. I don't know if guaranteeing any sort of playoff spot is the right way to go about doing it if the tournament is going to stay as short as it is. If you want to lengthen the tournament and make it 25 games, maybe I'll feel a little bit differently. Because your record, I guess your overall season record is probably going to be more conducive with what your in-season tournament record is. But yeah, you could, because it's within the first like 20 games, you could win 7 games in a row and just lose everything the remainder of the season and be perfectly healthy for the playoffs.
I mean, that's what the Lakers are doing anyway, so.
Right, exactly. I think that would be counterintuitive anyway. It probably wouldn't be smart.
How wild is it that the Lakers are 7-10 outside of the in-season tournament?
Right.
That's actually crazy.
I know. But I just had to pose that question because I saw it come up on SportsCenter and I was surprised by it. I know we had talked about it, but I was surprised that it was still being asked because it just doesn't feel it doesn't feel like you that would be worthy.
So you remember with the new this new CBA, teams that are above the second apron luxury tax can't then sign like waivers, pretty much like guys that got waived from a team and then sign them for cheap, like vets that are ring chasing. You remember that?
Yeah.
What if the winning the in-season tournament allows you for that season alone, you can sign someone even though you're above the luxury? What if it had like contract implications?
No, because I think that would be determined by who was available, right?
Well, we don't know who's going to be available this season right now, but the Lakers having that opportunity, and then you would have teams maybe go a little bit harder, like going deliberately over the salary cap, over the luxury cap in the offseason because they're banking on winning this in-season tournament. And then they're playing phenomenally hard because they need that opportunity. Like the Bucks, they have to add someone.
Right.
And they need that opportunity. And I think they're over the luxury cap.
Yeah, look, like I said, I'm super interested to see what they're going to end up doing with the reward. The $500,000 is a good start. It certainly seemed to get players to play pretty hard. I was surprised by how serious these players seem to be taking this tournament. It was really cool to see it. But I was very surprised. I don't know what it's going to be in the future. I like the idea of trying to come up with, you know, maybe a different way to shake it up a little bit. Cause I think eventually the $500,000 isn't going to be necessarily as appealing. It's always going to be appealing to guys on the bottom end of the bench. But it'd be really, really cool to see if they could find a way to make it a little bit bigger. I don't know. I don't know what the right word would be, but
is there any sport where you get a competitive advantage from winning something? Off the top of your head? Like soccer is so big on those tournaments happening during your regular season, but I don't think you win it. Like, it's just all about perception in fans' eyes. Like, oh, right, we won the Carabao Cup, so we're a better team and we're going to win the Premier League or whatever. We won the FA Cup and we're trying, that just validates us more as a champion if we win the Premier League, type of thing.
Well, you would know more about it than I would because the soccer stuff is more your alley than mine. I can't think of anything in football or baseball, but
yeah, I don't think so either.
It'd be a pretty radical thing to say, hey, like there's going to be – like you're going to get a legitimate competitive advantage if you win this 7-game tournament. Like that would be a pretty radical thing.
It'd be kind of cool though.
Is there something in golf maybe? Are we
– no.
I don't think.
Well, I mean, technically, for the FedEx Cup, your placement, like your placement in the rankings, gives you strokes towards that last tournament, right? Like you start 11 under, and then everyone behind you starts 10, 9, 8, 7. You know, so then there's like your form leads to helping you in that one tournament. That's kind of an equivalent.
Right.
But then that's sort of the opposite. Like, that's an entire season of proof that, yes, you are in fact, or you have in fact scored and earned the most amount of points, whether through majors or through winning tournaments, multiple tournaments, you earn this advantage in this one tournament. This would be, oh, you win this one tournament and that helps you for every other tournament after that.
Right.
Type of thing. That's that sort of disconnect in intuition.
Right. Well, either way, I definitely think it's going to get tweaked. What it gets tweaked to, I'm not sure, but I'm all for the idea of kind of fiddling with maybe different rewards, not necessarily each season, but until we find something that feels a little bit more valuable, I guess, than just the $500,000. But speaking of money.
Just poo-pooing the $500,000.
Well, speaking of money.
Shohei Ohtani doesn't care about $500,000.
Right. So by now, everybody's aware that Shohei Ohtani signed the 10-year, $700 million contract. Yep. Which is just funny.
That's not even an exaggeration. That's accurate.
So here's – you want to hear something crazy? So
yep.
Brock Purdy's entire earnings
– No, don't even do that.
No. Brock Purdy's entire earnings for the season is $870,000.
Oh, yeah.
Shohei makes that in two games.
I bet Brock Purdy would like the in-season tournament winnings.
I know. Shohei Ohtani would make that – within two games. However, here's the interesting thing. That contract, there's $680 million of it is deferred.
Yep.
So this is a very interesting thing because I didn't know that this was necessarily doable.
Yeah.
So from Bleacher Report, obviously the contract is worth $700 million, and in baseball, that's guaranteed.
Yep.
From 2024 to 2033, Shohei will be making $2 million a season.
2033.
And then from 2034 to 2043.
Oh, my God.
He'll be making $68 million a year.
And so, he's probably not even going to be playing then.
Right. So Jeff Passan, who is an MLB insider, he sent out a tweet that said, for anyone wondering if the MLB will challenge or cancel Ohtani's contract, the answer is unequivocally no. There's a specific article in the collective bargaining agreement that addresses this, and it's very clear. Deferred money is limitless, even $680 million of a $700 million contract. Oh, and here's the actual article right here. It says, there shall be no limitations on either the amount of deferred compensation or the percentage of total compensation attributable to deferred compensation for which a uniform player's contract may provide. So what the Dodgers did was totally, totally legal. Even if people are not happy about it, they didn't break any rules. It's literally in the
I'm not happy about it.
MLB rulebook.
That but team this is insane. A super team.
You're going to be paying Shohei Ohtani $2 million a year for 10 seasons. You
know what's the craziest thing?
That's unbelievable.
The Giants agreed to the same stipulations.
I know. I saw that.
They would have given it, and I would have been jumping out of my chair for that.
I know. I saw that. It was the same thing, right? It was $700 million for 10 years. It was an identical offer.
Well, and I think they did the deferment, too.
Yeah. That – to be well, because you know what the crazy thing is that 10-year window where he's making $2 million a year, if he's still playing in the league by then, he could get another contract. I don't know how big it would be, but he could have another contract on top of what the Dodgers are going to be paying him after the contract.
Well, he is, I mean, he's 29. And he's already had – I mean, I doubt he'll be pitching that late in his career. He'd be in his age 38 season with the Dodgers. It's not impossible. He's not going to get a huge deal.
No, but what I'm saying is that even if you got another deal for like $30 million, like – I mean, it's – you could be – just the amount of money you'd be bringing in.
So this is the part to me that's actually wild. Like, can we see this more? I guess in baseball, yes.
Yeah.
For sure. But can we see this in other sports? Like, Tom Brady would have done this. And I think that's kind of what the NFL is with the restructuring of guys' deals. Like, I swear, George Kittle signed for, I don't know, $12 million a year, but somehow they keep restructuring his deal and moving money farther and farther down the line where he's then only getting paid $2 million this season and the Niners still have cap space. Like, this keeps happening, right? I guess this is just a little bit more upfront with it. And I was kind of thinking, like, $2 million is, I mean, if I got paid $2 million for the next 10 years, that would be absolutely phenomenal. Right. But for a professional athlete of a guy in stature as Shohei Ohtani, who is a two-time MLB MVP.
He's the most talented baseball player like we've ever seen.
Oh, in our lifetime, he's going to be the most talented baseball player. And he is foregoing the most money he can make. Right. But it's just weird from like a financial point. Right. Because you would want that money as early as possible so then you can invest that and make money on top of it. Right. Mm-hmm. So the fact that he is choosing to get the largest lump sum 10 years from now, that money is not going to be worth as much.
Right.
Which he is just saying, I'm okay with.
Mm-hmm.
Which is, I mean, it's honestly wild that his agent was like, yes, we are good with that. And I wanted to see, because he obviously came in, he signed for a pretty big deal because he was a touted free agent when he first came in to the MLB. He got $3 million in 2021. He got $5.5 million in 2022 and $30 million last season. So, I mean, he's not poor by any stretch.
Right.
But he hasn't been fairly compensated yet. And it's just wild that he's willing to make this sacrifice.
Yeah, it not being worth that much is definitely something to point out. It's obviously still going to be a ridiculous amount of money.
Yeah, it's generational wealth on the largest scale. But it's just, I mean, it's just weird that someone was like, yeah, well, let's do it. Like, you would rather it be front-loaded. Like, if it was a signing bonus of $600 million, where you got that up front, but it didn't go towards the cap,
mm-hmm.
type of thing. You would rather have that than, like, could you imagine if someone were to go up to you and like, Jason, 20 years from now, you're going to be making $10 million.
Love it.
And it's like, how do you then be like banking on that for 10 years from now? Like, that is so long. Do we know where we're going to be in 10 years from now?
No.
Like, that is just absolutely wild.
Right. And the whole part of, I mean, every part of the contract was crazy. The amount of money, the length, the deferred money. There was no part about reading that deal where I was just like, oh yeah, that makes sense.
In 2043... Shohei Ohtani is going to be like 40, close to 50. He's going to be one of the highest paid athletes.
Oh, absolutely.
But he's not going to be doing anything.
I know. Like, why play after that point, you know? I mean,
he doesn't have to.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Like, I mean, again, if you still can and you still love it, then obviously keep playing. But if you don't, then like, why even bother?
Why even bother now?
Collect your $68 million and just live your life.
It's going to be so sad when he doesn't win a World Series with the Dodgers during that entire span. It's going to be so sad.
I love the seeds that you're planting right now.
Oh, I could. Well, so my stepdad is a very big Dodgers fan. And I called him and was like, initially, it was, oh my gosh, they got Ohtani. They already have Mookie Betts, who's probably the second best player in Major League Baseball. Like, great. This team is even more loaded. Mm-hmm. Isn't it going to be, like, more sad when they disappoint in the playoffs inevitably and lose to a team like the Diamondbacks, who can't even win 90 games? in the regular season. Like, isn't that going to be more sad now with Ohtani?
Well, I mean, they're the Dodgers. They're always going to be.
They're the Dodgers.
They're always going to be in contention, it seems like. Even I, somebody who doesn't necessarily pay a complete attention to baseball, I mean, they're always there. And they just got the best players, so how could they not be?
They could find a way.
I mean, for your sake, you'd hope.
Well, the Giants are going to be there next year. I'll just put that out there. Yeah, they got Bob Melvin, which is cool. Great manager. But, yeah, they're just not going to be there. I think they got Bob Melvin. Did I just throw that out there and just expose myself?
I think you did.
San Francisco Giants.
Well, either way, the contract itself was just – it was insane. It was – there's nothing more to say about it. The fact that we're in a world now where these contracts not only eclipsed $500 million, but they eclipsed $600 million is crazy. It doesn't matter what sport it's in. But I guess the moral lesson of the whole thing is that if you're going to have a kid, just make sure they play baseball.
I was just about to say that. Still won't be able to sit for my kids' baseball tournaments. I can't sit that long on my Saturdays and Sundays. There's no way.
I know.
Even if you would guarantee me that my kid's getting $700 million, it's about my enjoyment at the end of the day.
Right, exactly. The parents are the most important.
There's no way my kid's doing wrestling. What's like, just really quick tangent, what's the one sport if your son or daughter came home and was like, I'm trying out for this, you would be like, hard pass?
I don't know. Rally car racing.
Oh, really? That would be sick.
Bro, I just watched a video of rally car racing the other day, and that just looked – the drivers are driving like there's a spawn point at the end. And the worst part is the fans are also acting like they have a spawn point too. Like if you watch – for anybody who's stuck this long through this episode, look up rally car racing right now. And you will see the most absurd racing clips you will ever see in your entire life. If you think F1 drivers are the best drivers in the world, they're not. It is.
That's a huge claim.
Dude, you need to watch these cars.
A huge claim.
Dude, I've never seen a car drift in midair before, and somehow they find a way to do this.
Midair before.
It's so weird. They launch these cars, like these rally cars, like they're just jumping down these like skinny ass dirt tracks, just flying through the air. It's crazy, and then they land and immediately go into a drift. Like, show me an F1 driver who leaps a car 200 feet, lands and immediately turns into a drift. Like, it's ridiculous.
They don't land 200 feet. Come on.
Dude, you need to watch some of these clips. Whether it's 200 feet or 100 feet, it doesn't take away the fact that it's happening. They're launching.
They're doing the big air. Like, if my son or daughter were like, yeah, I'm going to get into big air snowboarding or skiing, I'd be like, no, like the big pipe, you know, the big pipe, and they get big air. I mean, it's pretty self-explanatory. But it's like, I'd be like, no. First off, I'd be freezing because it's got to be in cold climates because of the snow. It's like, I'm going to be freezing sitting there, and especially starting out, you're going to be falling more than you're landing at that point. So it's like, what am I doing here?
Mm-hmm.
Like, Sean White's parents, I mean, like, objectively, awful parents.
I know, right? Sorry, I'm now distracted by watching these rally car highlights.
I looked up rally car highlights.
Dude, I'm watching these cars just fly through the air. It's unbelievable.
It's a lot of drifting.
It's a lot of drifting. The fans on some of these clips are like right next to the cars that are going hundreds of miles an hour, just flying through the air. It's the cameras are it's crazy.
Well, looks like the fans are on the straightaways at least.
It's unbelievable. I guess that one.
So do you just, like, do they go, like, there's only one car on the track and they go, like, to get the fastest lap, or they there multiple cars on the track at the same time?
I don't know. I just kind of – it just came onto my feed the other day, and now I'm just obsessed with rally car highlights. It's just unbelievable. It's so cool.
So you wouldn't want your kid to do that?
No, thank you.
Okay.
No, thank you. That's my answer. They can swim.
No. Swimming, there's no way. How do you cheer for someone that's swimming?
I don't know. You can't. I find it hard to cheer for myself when I'm swimming.
That's fair.
Yeah. All right. Well, we've reached the end of our time. I didn't even mention the picks thing. Well, we can do it off air.
Wait, what?
Well, okay. So just to close, here was my thought to put a little bit of a twist on the picks. You and I would have to pick three games. It doesn't necessarily have to be the three of the same games, but it would be the three games that we're absolutely confident is like a team is going to win. And in order to get a point for that week, all three of your picks have to be correct. And it would be whoever has the most points at the, you know, end of the season.
Oof. Can we do it like with the spread?
We could do it with the spread. We could
choose like underdogs.
Yeah, so like we could find a way to finagle it. We don't have to do it for this episode, but I think it'd be interesting instead of like picking all of the games to pick a line on three games, and you in order to get a point, all three of them have to be correct.
Whew.
And then
it's like a big parlay.
That's what I'm saying. But it's just like a three instead of it being honest, a big again like we're not, seven we're game not putting thing. It's money just three
down
games.
Here. We're not actually putting money down.
Right. But what do you think?
Oh, no, I like it.
All right, cool.
Because I already beat you, so.
Right. so we can sort of fiddle around with the idea. We don't have to do it on this episode. But
we're not doing it right now?
No, because we can't just do it impromptu, too.
Why can't I?
Because that's – no. We got to set this up properly. But
I know I'm taking Denver over Detroit. I'm telling you that right now. Plus 4.5. I got that one. That's one of my games right there. Give me the Bears against the Browns. That's a pretty good one.
All right. Well, we can do this off air.
Patriots getting 9.5 against the Chiefs in New England. Give me the Pats. No, come on.
Man. See, this is gonna be close. This is why. Yeah. Okay. So. All right, we will figure this out. We will come back next week, hopefully with a new picks game. Thank you all so much for listening. We really do appreciate it. Have a wonderful week. Getting close to Christmas, so hope everybody's gotten their Christmas shopping done. I know I haven't. I need to get on that. So same. Yeah. So everybody,
last one. I got the third. Cincinnati -3.5 against the Vikings. Okay, I got my three.
Okay, I feel like you're going to want to change on the past one. Anyway, thank you all so much. Have a wonderful week, and we will see you all very soon.
See ya.